Now, it looks like you have lived in Harford County all your life and born in Churchville?
Yeah. Born in the fifth branch up there.
Will they pick up that kind of soft popping like that?
Let's see, I'll have to see again. Who were your parents?
Alfred Corbin, he married Abba Ball, neighbors up there in Churchville.
Hmm. And was he the rector of the church?
Yes, he...
Wait, that's his grandfather.
Oh.
My grandfather, he built it. Had it. He finished furnished with money, I think, and he built it. And he preached there in several other Episcopal churches around the county.
Hmm.
And years and years, church burnt down one time, and they rebuilt it. So that's...
You do have... Miller Scarborough's history of the church up there. Well, that's Presbyterian Church, but I also have, my daughter-in-law did a paper on his grandfather.
Hmm.
It's all here, but if you're interested, you could borrow it.
Okay, yeah.
It's quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This one's kind of scribbled. I guess you can read it, but she has a better copy of it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did he come to be the minister there at the church? Was he originally from here, or did he come out here?
He's from Baltimore.
I think he came from Baltimore.
Hmm.
And that's, he built that church originally. It's all in the history.
Mm-hmm.
I've got it all down here somewhere.
Hmm.
He built it and started a school for young ladies there. He had three daughters, and he started the school there at Churchville.
Hmm.
Which one of these papers has a lot? These books has a lot.
Do you remember much about what he was like?
I don't remember at all. He died too soon for me to ever know him.
Hmm. And then what did your father do for a living?
Well, he worked in stores and Churchville and Bel Air and Harvey Grass. Then he inherited a farm, and we worked on that farm for 2 years in Dublin, and came back down here and bought this farm.
Mm.
At that time, I think 75-acre farm with the house and the barns and everything on it cost about $7,500. Now you can buy a lot for that.
Mm-hmm.
All these houses on where our farm used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got 3 acres left.
Hmm.
I kept 3 acres and gave each one of my son's lots. One of them built a deck house up on top of the hill. But if you want some history about things that happened in Harvey Grass, I can tell you about them.
Okay.
Well, the racetrack was kept many families living in Harvey Grass. I mean, they lived for many families, but lots of people hated it. But when they needed to, it used to all come a train. Then when during the war, they had to cut down on travel, and they'd fold it up. And people used to also make a living with the hunters. And all the rich people from Philadelphia and that ran would come here, and they'd take them out on the river duck hunting and goose hunting. And they made a good bit of money out of that.
Hmm.
Then we'll talk about the floods. Every year the ice would all come down and jam up on the piers of the bridges out here. And I've seen it flood, well, the first street in Harvey Grass, Water Street, is about a block from a water line. And I've seen it a block further back than that. People were on boats 2 blocks away from the river. And one time, one flood, the Aberdeen Proving Ground sent a couple airplanes up here to drop bombs. They tried to drop them between the highway bridge and the railroad bridge. They're pretty close together, but they dropped them and just made a little splash and didn't, might as well drop this pebble because they didn't do any good at all.
Mm.
So they just have to stand the floods. That was all year after year they look forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have a little bit of flooding, but not like that. They could stop that if it didn't want to save all the water back of those dams all the time.
Mm.
And out here on this hill, just across from our lane here, used to be a big spring there, and a dirt road. And there was a spring for people to drink out of, and then they ran a pipe from that down the hill a little piece and had a watering trough there, and everybody went up and down the hill would water the horses, stop and water the horses there. And
was this a hard hill to get up with a horse and buggy?
This, on this hill, when anybody got a car, they tested it out on here. And if it would go up this hill in high gear, it was a good car. If it wouldn't go up the hill, while it was second rate. But everybody ever got a car would check it out, see if it would make this hill in high gear. And about half of them wouldn't, half wouldn't. Now, of course, they all go on up there.
Was this hill called anything special?
Gover's Hill. And somebody, one of our friends, is looking up the Gover's name, where it came from. She felt talking to me Sunday, said she would have information on it pretty soon. And there's still springs off around here. This road out here used to always have springs right at the middle of it, and they built, when they resurfaced, there's water keeps seeping up through there, but this last time they headed it off pretty well. And then this railroad, I was going to tell you about this railroad, Pennsylvania Railroad, they used to keep all their banks and their property mowed right by hand and have flower beds and everything all around. It's beautiful. And then they began to cut down. Finally, they would have a man up on top of the bank holding a rope with a moor, the man pushing the moor down along the bank, this man up top would hold the moor from up the hill. And then I had a pair of young colts here, and they got asked me if I would cut it. So I used to cut those banks, that pair of colts, sometimes as far as from Principio Furnace Cross River to Perryman, right up to the tracks here. And nobody could ever tried that before. One of those horses would fall, the other one would pull him up the hill, he got back on his feet. I never heard a horse, but they'd wait until the grass got so high that in the fall they'd only have to cut it once and you couldn't see. And I went over cross ties and dry wires, everything else, and there used to be a saloon about half a block from the railroad. They'd go in there and get drunk and they'd come out and fall in that grass. I just missed a couple of them. I just saw them in time raising knives over them.
That's the storm.
And then the river, I'm talking about the river, it used to freeze every year. The real thick couple feet of ice on there. It used to skate here at the Prairieville every year. And horses and sleighs used to get out there and have races up and down the ice. And they had three or four ice houses. They used to cut ice and fill them every year. And depending on that, see, people depend on that for living down there too, as ice is cut. And there used to be canneries all over, several in Harrogate and all around the ring around here. All, I don't know how many canneries there were, but they've all folded up practically now, all of them folded up. But there used to be farming, a lot of farming where all these houses are, tomatoes, corn. And the fishing used to be real good around here. One year in particular, I don't know what caused it, but all the rockfish came out there, and there people used to at that time pretty near claim you could walk on them, and if they couldn't catch them any other way, hit them in the head with an oar. That was only that one time that ever happened. But they said that I never did any fishing, but they said that there was never anything like that out there. It'd be old rock fish. Just hit them in the head, hit them with an oar if they couldn't catch them any other way. That happened for about two or three days, and then they all disappeared. And we used to, I don't know, children now don't do it, but we used to all, every kid had roller skates. We used to roller skate up and down the streets in town there. All our schools there all the time.
Were the streets paved?
Streets, later on, when we used to skate there for a while, they weren't. In fact, a lot of them were slate.
But they were oyster shell.
Oyster shell, anything it had to use for it. Yeah. And then this, there still is a stream used to come in part across Harrogate, this Juniata Street. And it They had bridges across a couple of streets now, but when they built the dam, they covered it over and piped it. Mm. But there was a textile that drained into that stream, and that was a dirty, stinking mess. It was red, white, blue, and green, every color that we used to dye the goods with, you know, be in that branch. Mm-hmm. And this had road wide enough, hardly wide, for two people, two cars or teams to pass each other on one side of it. Mm-hmm. And the health department said the water was fit to drink. And you couldn't even stand the smell of it. But that lasted for years until they, like I say, when they built the dam, they covered it over and put a railroad track over top of it. Mm-hmm. So now you just see the two ends of it. Mm. And this house here that we're living in, I was working in the post office when they built the new one in town, and I bought the house that they tore down to build the post office. The great big three-story house had a all porta-potty granite foundation, had a walnut stairway all the way clear from the first floor up to the third floor, winding around up through there. Mm-hmm. So I bought it and had moved up there and built this house out of it, even the foundations built out of that stone and slate on the roof from there. And these new shutters, you know, that have come into vogue now, that slats
inside.
Mm-hmm. I had a pile of them with fill this room pretty near. Every window had those, and the windows were, see, there's a couple of them. They were all about that size, at least six feet tall. Hmm. Well, these were all, most of the ones I have, I cut down. See, that, those over there, I had to cut them down to make them fit where I wanted to build. Hmm. But they were, it was an enormous big house. Hmm. And I think I bought it for $200 and had it all moved up here for $200 and mm-hmm. had a contractor build it and dug the cellar and did a lot of work on it myself. And mm-hmm. but this ground around here is hard to work on because it's just solid stone rock. Mm. And there's one thing more I thought you might be interested in. There's an old fellow around here, he didn't have very much education, put it that way, but 1/4 July, they had the doubleheader ball game out here. And he pitched in the morning right-handed and won the game. In the afternoon, he pitched left-handed and won the game. So, his name was Lou Simpers. People have known. Hmm. But that's about all that I had written down and thought I'd tell you about it. Hmm. And of course, I've seen it grow and grow and grow.
Did you live in Churchville long?
No, I don't know how long, what age I was. I think I must have been probably 2 years old when we went to Bel Air and stayed up there a couple of years, and then we moved back here down to Harvey Grass and moved there all the rest of it. Well, and then for 2 years, like I say, we had that farm at Dublin, moved up there for 2 years, and then mm-hmm. moved back here and bought this place, and I've been here ever since. Mm. So I've never lived more than 10 miles from where I was born. Mm. But this house my son built up on top of the hill, and I had an awful lot of chances to sell it, but I want to keep the family because it's one of the best views in the country. He's right up there, he looked right over the bay and the river and the town and everything. Hmm. Other son hadn't built yet, he's working in Pennsylvania, so I don't know if he ever will.
Mm-hmm. Why did you choose to live here?
Well, I helped my father farm.
They moved from that house up there in 1918.
And then I went to work for an electric company, a little bit of everything for them, and then I had a scholarship to Hopkins given to me, 4-year scholarship to Hopkins Electrical Engineering, and I went 6 weeks and came home one weekend, and we had a dairy farm in. I delivered milk and everything else, and my father was sick, and one brother was working away from home, and the other one had a broken arm or something had happened to him, so I had to drop out and go to work, and this fellow needed home, so they sent that scholarship back to me every year for the 4 years. It was a Dr. Callenhoven, was the head of the electrical engineering department. He took a liking to me, and he kept sending it to me. And, well, by the way, he perfected, was one of the first ones to perfect some electrical system that helped the heart. He died a few years ago, but he was really world famous. He was a wonderful man. Mm-hmm. But then I came back and started in substituting at the post office and worked substitute carrier and part-time carrier and space delivery and parcel post, then regular carrier and then regular clerk and assistant postmaster and then acting postmaster and then postmaster.
You were postmaster of Family Grace?
I had the backing of both the Democratic Central Committee and the Republican Central Committee, both of them backing me.
Huh.
And but there's a long getting around to it. I told them 3 or 4 times I didn't want it. And I was working 12, 14 hours a day. Just getting tired of it. But they finally came through. So I was postmaster until I retired.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was that like? What'd you have to do?
I had to do Britain everything. I was responsible.
Like it is now.
I was responsible for the. If I was in Florida on a vacation and one of my carriers did something on the street somebody didn't like, I was the one that took responsibility for it. I was responsible, and no matter what happened, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they held me responsible, no matter if I wasn't even in town. But they had very little trouble with all of us. We all got along, and very little trouble, but those inspectors would give you a hard time. They'd come up here and they had to find something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Did you always have mail delivery out in the city?
Yes, and then we're the city delivery, and then we had three rural rats, two rural rats at that time, and the star rat. The star rat carried mail to Darlington and then delivered on his way back and forth. So we had 27 people working there at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But one time there were three carriers. Part of the time I was one of the three that carried mail over the whole town twice a day. And then in between times, you had to get an old truck out and deliver parcel post. And now they have, oh man, I guess 10 carriers probably, mailed every once a day.
Mm-hmm.
And they got these little trucks now, they deliver most of the packages and mm-hmm. along with the mail now.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to, in those days, you pretty had to run to get around your route and get the day's work done.
What time would you have to get out and start?
Early.
Yeah, right. We'd leave. I guess I'd get up around 6 o'clock, from what I remember. And the first real mail route I had at home was out in this new project. It's not new now, but they built it for doing one of the wars. And man, the first winter I carried out there, it was the worst winter we ever had. That wind, I'd walk down the street, see garbage cans hidden for the river. And the clothes blowing off the line, it was terrible cold out there. I had a relay box near one house there, and the lady used to let me sit in her kitchen and eat lunch. I'd stop there for lunch every day, about 10 minutes, and then get back out to work again. Since I retired, I've been working harder than I ever worked, I think. Gardens, and we've got 3 acres of grass to keep looking decent, and then I was a magistrate for a while, a justice of peace, and secretary, treasurer, chairman of commerce for 4 or 5 years, and I've been an elder in the church for 40 years, most of, off and on most of the time, and I said, I'm treasurer of Blood Bank of Maryland with and director and steering committee and nominate committee in that. And I've been the secretary of the Rotary Club for about 16 years. So all together, day and night, I've been keeping on the go.
Did you meet a lot of people in the town when you were postmaster?
Well, surely I knew everybody and knew Still, after been 15 years, I can remember most of the house numbers where everybody lived. I don't know, when they say their name, their name pops in my mind. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. And those new houses in Project, though, they fooled me for a while. The numbers out on the street would be one thing, but I didn't realize that the number back into the almost all courts there, and the number back in there and back around out the other side. And I got there with special every letter and couldn't find the number, save my life. But those houses were only built to last a few years, and they've sold. They've all been sold to private people now, and they've fixed them up. I mean, they're still nice houses. Mm-hmm. But they weren't built for it. Mm. But
what was Havre de Grace like when you came here? Was it just a small little town?
Well, it's grown some, but there's still a lot of the old houses still down there. Mm. It's a spread out. Of course, it's all up through here now. It's taken into the city. And,
was this all real rural up here?
This was all his father's farm. All these houses from here to the railroad. His father's farm when I came here in 1935.
The city line now goes
hands several times.
City line just about a couple, 300 or 400 yards up the hill here. That big house cuts across over in there.
Hmm. Now, what about? Let's see, is it the Angel Hill Cemetery over here?
That's Angel Hill's there, and there's Mount Aaron up, the Roman Catholic one's up on top of the hill there on the other side.
And Angel Hill was named for a little child. The first little child buried in there, his name was Angel.
And there used to be a lot of boat traffic to Havre de Grace, too. There used to be excursion boats came up. Well, they hauled freight up, and old Susquehanna and Emma Giles and... four or five of them, I forget some of the other names, but they brought freight up about every week, and they'd take out moonlight excursions about once every week, or every 2 weeks during the summer, down to Betterton or Todchester or someplace like that.
Mm-hmm. Until they built Conowingo up here, there was enough water to bring big boats up, and slowed down with them.
Mm-hmm. How did you two meet?
Well, we're distantly related. I came down here to visit. I'm from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Came down here to visit.
Came down to DAR meeting.
CAR meeting. On my way to Washington, and stopped here and spent the night. That's how. That was a few years ago.
Huh. What did you think about Harford County when you got here?
His mother was a Ball, and the first James Harvey Ball that came to Maryland came from New Jersey, from up where I live. So I had heard Harford County all my life, and my family used to visit this family down here, and I was here when I was 3 years old. The family, original family, Ball family home was at Thomas Run. Where Thomas Run is, up beyond the junior college. Mm-hmm. A big stone house up on the left-hand side, beyond college there. It was the original Ball home. And I was there when I was a little girl. I was 3 years old, and all I remember were the white cats. But I had heard Harford County all my life, and how my father used to come down here. Wasn't really new to me. Mm-hmm. And now I guess I'm a native Marylander almost.
Were people pretty friendly to you?
Oh, yeah. Of course, we went to church right away. I'm dyed in the wool Presbyterian. My great great grandfather was a Presbyterian minister for 41 years in a church in New Jersey. So I went right to the church, and I had most of our friends. And then I worked for the Record newspaper down here for 17 years. Mm. What he didn't know in the post office, I knew it to pay for the kinds of people he sent. So, we have two sons, and They both graduated from Hermann Goetz High School. Mm. Both are college graduates.
One's a doctor in entomology.
One's a PhD from Penn State. One graduated from the University of Delaware. Mm-hmm. And I have interesting papers here that I don't know whether you have copies of. Or mm-hmm.
But see, my mother's a Presbyterian, my father's grandpa, of course, bishop, preacher, and minister. And I think there were three of us boys, and I think they sort of divided us up amongst the churches. Well, we wound up, all three of us just jumped right over exactly the opposite of what they picked out for us. So that's the reason I, of course,
he had two brothers
when married her.
And he had to go to Presbyterian church with me. Mm-hmm. That's the way, but his mother was a member of Churchill Presbyterian Church all her life. She never did change her affiliation. Mm-hmm. And his father stayed at Trinity. These papers and things, I suppose you have copies of all these things. I don't know. But are you interested in... I'm sure you do. This is not old. This was 1967. Mm-hmm. I have a copy of Mr. Colburn's will. Mm-hmm. And all kinds of little papers here that are... Mm. You know, part of his diary. My sister and brother-in-law have his diaries, original diary. This was I still haven't found the one told about giving away his coat and his hat and everything. This doesn't seem to be that's the original Mr. Colburn's will.
I've heard my father tell about when he worked in that store in Churchville, the grocery store. There were two of them in Churchville. And they'd get a great big bag of tea come in there, and they had three bins. They'd dump it in the three bins, had three different prices. And people bought the same tea and paid the high price, how much better it was than the rest of them, but the same tea that they were buying in all three bins.
This tells you a little bit about Mr. Colburn, where he went to school and how he was called to be a minister here, who he married. Mm-hmm. He was married twice. Mm-hmm. One wife lived a year, not even a year. Hmm. And, I love about his children, and this is the paper that my daughter-in-law did, and that's a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. But of course, he had to travel around horse and buggy and all that.
He had three churches. He had Churchville and Trap Church, up, you know where Trap Church is? Mm-hmm. And Spasusha.
Oh.
At different times. You know, some part of the time he just had one, sometimes he had all three of them.
Hmm.
But
it's funny, but the farm we lived on, Trap Church and Trap School, were right on the corner of the farm when we lived up there. We used to be able to get on a sled in wintertime and just never get off the way again in school.
Hmm.
And that church was dilapidated. The grounds weren't kept up at all, and they had to have a meeting there once every year to keep it as a church. Otherwise it wouldn't have been a church any longer. The bishop used to come up there, so we went down there one Sunday. The bishop was there, and they opened up the organ, had an old organ to play it, and it was full of snakeskins. And next time they had it, we had two little rat terrier dogs, and they chased a polecat underneath of the church, and they had... And fighting that polecat on the church broke the service up that Sunday.
Now this was at Trinity?
No, this was Trap.
Trap, oh.
Mm-hmm. It was right on the corner of our farm.
And so it didn't last too much longer being a church?
Yes, Baptists have taken it over and they renovated it. And I think it took all the old times tombstones and put along a fence.
But it's been many years since there was an Episcopal church up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a long time ago, but...
There's some very interesting old...
They keep it nice now up there.
Mm-hmm. Graves up there.
But some of those tombstones were very old. Very old.
Hmm.
The Colburn family came from England in 1800, way back in... This is a Colburn book. That's all Colburn.
Oh.
Hmm.
It's
history.
She goes into that stuff. I don't bother.
Yeah,
they had somebody here the other day talking about who this descended from that, and I said, oh, I know that I'm descended from Adam and Eve, and that's all I care about. <That's> all.
Was there any kind of a rivalry between all those churches? The Churchville being the home of, I guess, Churchville Presbyterian first, and then the Trinity? Or were they just all working together?
No, I never knew of any rivalry. No, mm-hmm.
Churchville Church was the first Presbyterian church in the county. Mm. As far as I know, there's a theory there was an earlier one than that, up Deer Creek Way somewhere. Mm-hmm. But Churchill, all of Bel Air, Harvey Grace, Deer Creek Harmony up here, and Aberdeen, all evolved. I don't know, there's a lot of history of Churchill Church. I guess you've talked to people up there. Mm-hmm. The Finneys and the Balls, and there's lots of old names. Mm. A lot of these papers that I have here, the names, some of them, the Harlan. Of course, the Harlans were Wesley, Trinity, Episcopalians. Mm-hmm. Some of them were Presbyterians, some of them were Episcopalians. The family seemed to be split along. Mm-hmm. It's like his family, some of them were Presbyterians
or
something. Episcopalians.
Mm-hmm. But when we were living up trap, a man named Silver that used to live over at Noble's Mill, he gave me a little lamb. Mother wouldn't take it, so couldn't raise it on the bottle. And I don't know how many sheep I raised from that one. And first time we ever tried to shear one, we took a pair of tin snips, I think, and we made an awful mess of it. So finally I got some shears, and I got pretty expert at it. I used to go around the county when I had time to shear sheep for people. Hmm. I could do an expert job in 5 or 10 minutes. I have a sheep shear and fleece just like a rug. You just fold it up and send it away.
I used to help him with that when I first came down here. I used to sit on a hedge and shear sheep.
Were there many sheep being raised here?
There were lots of sheep around.
Is
there
that
at,
right?
At that time. One fella called me up one day and wanted me to come up and shear his sheep. He said, my son's been doing it, but he said, I'd like to have him sheared this time, not butchered. Because those sheep shears, blades about that far apart, and if they get a wrinkle in the skin, you just take a big piece of it.
And those weren't electric when he first started. He used
a crank. Yeah, the crank.
Huh. Well, did you ever use the...
No.
You had one. I never cranked that, but when he got electric, those were empty. They worked pretty swell. He got good at doing that. He found a sheep shear the other day. We thought we'd give him away. He found it buried back in the back end of a closet. Huh. So. What else to tell you?
Do you remember any of the people around in the city that made a mark on, you know?
Well, Miller Tidings, of course. He knew everybody in there together, and you'd be half a block away from it. You'd see, he'd just throw up his hand high. He knew everybody by first name, and he used to call him Chief, and didn't ever call him by anything else but Chief, and he was one wonderful man.
He helped him dig cellar for his house down here in Harry Race, or dug it for him, I guess, didn't he?
You mean, yeah.
Yeah, the house in there, he has a house, had a house, right in town.
Nice and down on the waterfront. But there have been lots of, well, of course, the O'Neills and the Lighthouse, you know, sister-in-law.
Have you talked to people. Virginia Colburn and Ray Colburn? Well, you can get more history out of her than you can of.
Her grandfather was supposed to have defended
John
that
O'Neill.
Lighthouse.
Grandfather.
I guess so.
War of 1812, that'd be a great-grandfather. But she lives right up there on the hill. She can tell you more about Harry Grace than I can, or he can, you know. Mm-hmm. Different things. She's studied a lot of history.
But I've seen the hospital built from, it was an old home. And one of my sons, had his tonsils taken out down there or something in the old red day. He used to have a sort of dome on the front of it, with the operating room. When they built that front part on the hospital, they had the steel already put up, put brickwork around it, and it was during one of the wars. and they wouldn't let them use the steel. Told them they might want it for the war. Well, they never did use it.
Second World War.
They never did use the steel, and they left it lay there. And then by that time, the hospital had the wood frame up with it, and now that's why they're having to tear it down, because it's wooden framework. And if they put this steel in the first place, it wouldn't be tearing it down and save millions of dollars on the job. And they never used the steel after all that. Then they tore the bridge down there. You knew it used to be a vehicle bridge across there. And
double-decker.
Well, not for a long bridge? Not for a long time it wasn't. It was single. And they used to have to stop, of course, one end. If a big truck or anything going across or anything slow, they'd stop and warm up to it, got across. And pretty nearly every day, there's a dozen cars got their fenders mashed up. You'd see them coming through town. And then they put that double deck
the
up
on top of it. The cars got bigger, they had to build another deck on top of it, so they could go one way and one another.
That was a
one
of the few double-deck bridges in the world. And it was a drawbridge too, and every time a boat would come up, a large boat, they'd have to open that draw, and that would stop traffic everywhere. That
and
railroad bridge
to
too.
About, I don't know how many men down here, and they all made a fortune off of it because it charged people.
No.
Still, what?
It was the railroad sold it. They sold it to these people.
They sold the double-decker bridge. Bridge.
Long before that, before they built. Before they had that bridge, the piers were there for some reason. I don't know if they ever ran a train across them or not. But they sold about 7 or 8 men bought it for a few $100s, very few. And they used to call it the Gold Mine Bridge. They made fortunes out of that bridge.
Some of the families are still living on the
Used to be a man lived up the country here with a. I have 2 hotels in town. One of them is called the Harford House. It was right across from where we lived. And this fellow would come down from up around Glenville. Drove down there with his horse and buggy. And they'd have to carry him up, put him in the buggy. And they'd untie the horse and turn the horse loose. And that horse took him home every time. Right? Never any accidents or anything. The horse just took him home.
He's talking about the Harford House. Well, that's not even, but you do know where the Legion, American Legion is down here. It was originally the ferry house for the old Post Road. Came up from Washington to Philadelphia. New York, I guess. I don't know if it went any farther than Philadelphia or not.
Lafayette's supposed to stop there. That's why they called it the Lafayette Hotel. But they did. I guess it's true. I don't remember, but they ran the trains across it on the ice 1 year. Not the engine, they just would pull a couple cars across at a time. The ice was that thick. But then those banks weren't too hard to guess at that time. It was on level, and they had ferried the trains across until it raised the bank, put those banks and put new railroad tracks in there. And up on the B&O Bridge there, I'm not sure the story. I'd tell you a story of that, but somehow the train went off, before they finished it, the train went off one engine and a couple cars went overboard. And a couple of people until recently, still lived in Harvard Grass, or at least one that went down with that. Didn't kill him.
Tripled
him
up. Yeah. He comes up with new and early ones. I thought I knew everything it was.
Were there lots of saloons one time at Harvard Grass?
Oh, it was full of them.
Bookie joints and saloons. That's where it was when I first came home.
But this being no railroad, used to be pretty near as busy as the Pensy, and now it's down to where just freight, nothing but freight. And at one time, there was a law passed when they first built that Pennsylvania Railroad came through here that every train had to stop in Prairieville and Harvard Grass. And now there's none stop.
It used to be 50 cent a day stop.
Every train had to stop at both places.
I don't even have a station now. Everybody rode trains. They used to get on trains in Swan Creek, ride to Harvard Grass, ride to Aberdeen for a nickel or so. You didn't have a car, you could jump in and go like you want.
Well, a good many people worked in Baltimore, didn't get home till late, and the conductor got to know them, and before they got to town, he'd around, wake them up, tell them to get up,
let
get off.
Let them off anywhere they wanted to get off.
Hmm.
Stop them there anywhere along the right of way and let them out.
Mm-hmm.
That was
the. What about the Havre de Grace racetrack? What do you remember about that?
Well, it is known all over the world. In fact, every time I travel away from home, people, I'd say, from Havre de Grace, they say, well, that's where the racetrack is. I still think it's Havre de Grace racetrack. It was one of the most famous ones in the country, I guess.
Hmm.
And they had the best horses going. Like I say, that day I saw that man of war run with a beautiful horse. And I was working on that company office one day, and a friend of mine came down the street and said, Herbie, you want to make some money on the horse today? I said, yeah. He said, give me $2. I gave him $2, and the next morning he came back and gave me back $18.40. Little horse called the Doctor. And I used to go out and watch him run every time he ran. He was this little old black horse, and man, he could run.
Mm.
But I didn't have any idea, just to get just gave him $2 to take out there. brought back $18.40.
That used to be the thing to do around here. This town came alive when racing season. Everybody rented rooms to them. If you had a room, we didn't.
People had regular ones that would come year after year and pay all kinds of money for the rooms.
They closed it down during the war. They opened it up for just one season, I think, after the war.
And when these people
didn't do much, so they closed
them. These horse owners got to know the people real well. They used to tell them when they thought the horse would win or something, they made a lot of money betting out there.
Mm.
And there's a family in town had the franchise, one of them used to call it a franchise, but you'd sell all the feed to the horses and they'd come in there with a class car.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure a lot of people came, but mostly by train. They'd come from Philadelphia, Baltimore places, and train had a sidetrack out there, still out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the National Guard took it over finally.
Mm-hmm.
But Harry Grassy used to come alive during the racing season.
Did it suffer badly during the Depression? Were people really hurting around here?
Yes, they were.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't living in Harvard Grace at the time, but some people used to work in the store. My father, he got pretty wealthy and worked in Philadelphia and wiped him out. Took everything he had.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a preacher in our church one time said that during that Depression, his father sold apples on the street corner to keep the family together, and said first tenth of it, what he sold, the money he took in, went in the tithe and for the church, he said. And, you know, we were selling apples, he wasn't getting very much, but he said whether they had anything much to eat or not, the first tenth went into that box where the church money went.
Mm. Did you always have electricity up here on this hill?
Yes. I worked for the Havre de Grace Electric Company. Used to have a power plant downtown, whole coal fired. And during one war, we had an awful lot of trouble getting coal. We had that bar of coal or Perry Point to keep the power plant running. And then Northern Maryland Electric Company came in here and bought it. And another fellow and I went around. I had a book, and he was supposed to do the climb of the poles. We measured the height of every, well, we didn't measure, but we knew the height of every pole and every guy wire and the size wire on every pole and the distance and the number of insulators and braces and bolts and everything on every pole. And we went back, this man owned it, but Mr. Harlow, he was a smart man. And we went in one night, we had some street over here, we had number 2 wire, I think, written down. He looked at it and said, I think you back tomorrow and check it, you'll find number 4 wire. So we went back the next day, he was right. I think he could have sat in that office and written down. Well, we did. And then we went back into the office and started to figure out depreciation on everything, meters and stuff like that. So just about that time I had to leave to go to Hopkins, and so I didn't finish that up. That was the figures they used when they bought it. And then somehow or other the gas electric company slipped in here, and within a day or two had their poles all around, and they got the franchise away from Northern Maryland somehow. I don't know just how it worked, but they slapped poles in here like toothpick, like fence, putting up a fence or something, and put their own system in. So they took over. Hmm. Gas electric had ever since. But I used to read meters and repair meters too, and when the red meter, I hated to go to some hazard because electricity was awful high then. I had private power plants that had a lot higher than it is even now. And you go in people's houses, how much meter read this one? And I'd tell them, they'd keep after me for a half block down the street, I'd hear them still going. And then when they start getting irons and things like that to use heat, then when the bill, or even electric stove, I don't know if they even had electric stove, but anything electric, if they used heat, that's where electricity comes up. And I could tell pretty near when I read the meter what somebody bought something new. Mm-hmm. And then I read in Aberdeen for a while, and I used to go over in Perryville too. Mm.
Were they anxious to buy this new electricity and all its products and things, or were there some hesitancy?
Yeah, they went right for it, but they did some pushing their wares too. Now, we bought an electric stove, the first one we ever had. They practically gave it to us. Do you remember how much? I don't know, it was around $20 or something like that for a good electric stove. And then they would add that onto your bill so much a month. It was unbelievable what they would sell you a stove for just to get you started using, because they knew they'd soon get it back.
Did the phones come in before the electricity? Telephones?
Oh, I think so. I think so. This store where my father worked down here in town was called the Brown Implement Company, and they had everything. They had all kinds of hardware stuff, and they had the coal yard, and they had a tinsmith shop out back, and they had anything you want to buy pretty near them. Horses, they kept horses, and used to have the fire engine, they'd pull them around town, and the men would pull them, and every once in a while they'd have a fire, and father would get one of these horses hook on the fire engine and take it so they didn't have to pull it. People in town used to own calves. My father had a couple when we lived down there. Kept them there at the store in the barn with the horses.
Do you remember your first automobile that was around town?
Almost. Almost. It was I forget who had it now, but I know. I don't know who had the first one, but the neighbor lived a couple houses from us named Pusey's. They had one, and she took me one day across the bridge and back for a ride, and I thought that was the greatest thing in the world, riding that up there. But they'd come to cross the bridge and come up a street there a little piece, and wouldn't know how to get through hard gas, and some of us kids used to think that was the greatest thing in the world, jump on the sideboard and show them that. They only had one turn, but we wouldn't tell them that. We'd get on there and take a ride. But there used to be a taxi driver down here, a real short little man. And the story is he ran over somebody one time and looked back and got upset and back over it second time.
I thought the Burns had a carriage back in there. Well, they did. I thought they had cars pretty early.
Well, they were on. They used to make.
They sold cars, didn't
they? I don't know. I don't think so. They made carriages and mail wagons and things like that.
Did they take the mail around in wagons before they got automobiles?
Yes. When we lived up the trap, our mail used to come from Street, Highland. And that mail carrier was a man named Scarborough. And he had to make that trip from Street clear down there. It's about a 30-mile round trip, I think, at least. Mm-hmm. And he had that horse trained so that he'd hardly ever touch a line. That horse would, and I never saw a horse take a walk. He'd pull up the mailbox and stop, mm-hmm. and you hear that mailbox lid close, he'd start off in a trot. And he'd pretty regular every day coming. Used to, in wintertime, he'd have it all bundled up and have a lantern or something in, by his feet. And he had a spare horse, a younger horse, and we could always tell when the old horse wasn't on because the younger horse took longer, you know, the younger, but he didn't know how to stop and start like this other horse, and then be an hour or two later when they had that young horse. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he did that for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. Well, all the people in town, yes, they used to. Use horses on these rural rides, but there used to be a livery stable down there in town too. Where they kept the horses for funerals and all that sort of thing, and would take care of board horses and keep them there when people wanted to shop. I remember that. They had upstairs where they used to take the horses up in the top part of the building. And had slats across, you know, for the horses to get a grip to get up there.
Store.
Well, the building's still there. So it was a garage filling station for a while. Ray's still there.
They
used to.
That's on the corner of Stokes.
It's used for electrical shops now, or the warehouse. But when I was a boy one time, I saw him bring up a great big load of hay on him, lifting on, take it back in there, and there's a man back there, and I saw him dump it on him, and I worried me for a long while. I thought that man never got out of there.
Do you remember while you were working at the post office, maybe, when all the Italian people started coming in to have the grace?
Mm-hmm.
When was that about?
Well, that was I don't know just what year it was, but they all settled up in this upper end of town, one lived across the road here. And he was a cheap, see, they used to have
a quarry.
They all worked up in this Cass Pass Stone Quarry.
And the
cheap dynamite, and, you know, little old fellow used to do the dynamite and across the street here. And the brothers built a house next door here, and there's a big old stump in there. And he went over and asked Frankie if he'd blow it out there for him. And I says, yeah, he says, I can take that stump and just take it and lay it right out on the side of the hole, just like he dig it out and lay it out there. So he said, all right, I think he put 7 sticks of dynamite on that thing. And he'd be a great big oak tree up here on the top, halfway up the hill. And I went up hidden back that, and then a couple of my brothers went up on the old house up there, way up on top of the hill, and sat on the roof to watch. And he set that dynamite off. And I looked up the top of that oak tree, and I saw a piece of big man flying over top of that oak tree. And another piece, and it landed pretty near up to the old house, and another piece went down here, same size, way off on that in that direction. Hmm. And he had a rock. I got a big rock out here in the front yard. He wanted to blow the house. Leave that rock alone. But you know, this house was that close. It was right where that house is now. Less than 100 feet away, and it didn't do a bit of damage to this house.
Huh.
The roof didn't put any, nothing fell on the roof, and the yard, just a few little twigs here and there, but he didn't lay that like he said he was going to.
I couldn't understand anything he said. It's hard to tell, I told you.
And I know what he told us.
So Italian.
Now, was the quarry something where they got, what, granite or something?
No, mostly ballast. Most of it was ballast for the railroads. But it was such hard rock that they had to close it down for a while. It kept breaking the crushers up. The crushers couldn't stand it.
Hmm.
But there was a big business there for a long time.
Mm-hmm. So it opened up again. Coming out of the truckloads.
Well, they more send out more barge loads that go down the river on barges. But they used it for city dump for a while. It's a great big hole where they dug the rock at. Mm-hmm. But that's a big thing at the crusher and everything up there. A big operation for a while. Mm-hmm. But like I said, they found that the crusher, the rock was too hard for them. Mm-hmm. And there is hard. This rock around here is hard. So now they quit making, let them dump and dump stuff up there and close the dump down and run the corporation taking a lot of stuff out of there right now. A 60th anniversary graduation next less than a month from now, our class.
Now, what class was that?
21.
Harry Grace High School.
Oh. One fellow, there were 20 of us in the class graduating, there's still 11 of us around.
Is that right?
One boy turned out to be a preacher, and he's coming in from California for it. Mm-hmm. He didn't do much in high school. He didn't study, and he married, and his wife died in a few months after he married her. And he turned completely around, and he started and went up New England. He had an uncle up there that was in the ministry. And he went through college, studied Greek and everything else, and came out and got a big high marks. And he had a church, a big church up there in New England, and then he went to one in near Los Angeles, California there. We went out to see him one time and took a half day for him to go through the church and all the buildings that were. And he had some woman in Washington had a $200,000 pipe organ built for him and had to take that there and put it in that church where he was. And how he ever did it, I don't know, because like I say, he didn't study in high school, he didn't have a background, but he did it. And he's a wonderful preacher. We had one reunion and went back. We always go back to church where we had our baccalaureate sermon, and he preached a sermon there the first time he came back. When he stopped, he said he's visiting now for the church, he's a visitor ministry, but he doesn't preach anymore. He likes our reunions, he's coming back. One's in North Carolina, one's down around Annapolis, one in Baltimore, and the rest of us right here in town still. Mm-hmm. Churchville.
Was it a one-room school?
No. Well, no, it was a...
Cross street from our high school, isn't it?
Must have been, I'd say 20 rooms, isn't it?
What?
I would say 20 rooms. That's what I would say. All right, I used to have a...
Your kids went there to elementary school. I never remember seeing it twice.
It was two stories high, Nick.
I know.
And between the rooms, when they opened them up for opening exercises, it had, folding doors now. And they were, they had two of it between each room. They must have been 20 feet long, I guess, 15, 20 feet long. They had handles on them and had to push them up. And then when it came down to open exercise, they were open and they wanted to have a start school. Our boys would all get on those handles and up and down and bam on the floor as hard as he could bang. I don't know why they didn't knock the school in or somebody didn't get killed. And he told me that's the way they used to do it. And then they decided to move across the street. And I helped work. I did some work on that new building that's down there now. Now that it's getting outmoded, they say. Mm-hmm. You have to do a lot of work on it. Mm-hmm. For a while there, they have to have it. Well, I think Ned, one boy started down in the opera house at school or something, didn't he? Mm-hmm. I thought he did. I thought Ned he did. But David, about 2 days before our graduation, the where we used to have our graduation, City Hall burnt down. And so we had to go down to the movies and have it. We didn't have any class night at all, just had graduation. And I remember we didn't have much of a graduation night. And Mr. Davis, this Walter Davis just died. He was we were the first class graduating when, after he came down here. And he got up and make the announcement. He said, the only entertainment we had tonight is Lenora Keatley singing. He says, that's unavoidable. That's what he meant. On account of the fire, you know, they couldn't have any entertainment. That's what he came out with. That's unavoidable. That guy used to even know what the piece was she sang. Forget it now. No, in Dublin, I think I went to Dublin the first year they built that school up there, a new school. What is the school now? There was one across the street there somewhere. And the girls used to have domestic science class, and one thing for us boys to do. They didn't have any shop or anything that kind of day, so we'd fool around out on the ground, so they'd bake cookies or something like that, and then we'd go in there and have them out the windows to us. But Dublin school has grown a lot since then. Mm-hmm.